It is 7:30, time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Mike Diedrich. Mike Diedrich is with the Seattle Draft and Military Counseling Center, which is affiliated with the GI Rights Hotline nationally, and he's also with the local chapter, Chapter 92, of Veterans for Peace. Mike, thanks for coming in and talking with us this morning.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Let's begin, if we could, and maybe you could start. Tell us, how did you get involved with draft and military counseling issues?
Well, actually, a number of years ago, I was involved with Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and we of course, were involved in draft and draft counseling. That was 1970-71. But most recently, I was involved with the Seattle Draft and Military Counseling Center and joined that organization as a board member and during the Gulf War. And shortly thereafter, the Seattle Draft and Military Counseling Center decided to support physically and financially one of the regional affiliates of the GI Rights Hotline. And by supporting that, we had to actually provide and fund a telephone line. And then right now we have six counselors who provide the telephone counseling, part of the telephone counseling network. And the GI Rights Hotline is a national organization that provides, for the most part, telephone counseling to active duty GIs who have questions about discharges, their rights, enlistment questions, that sort of thing, and also people who are in the delayed entry program. And there are six volunteers rotate the duties. The calls are routed to the national number and then routed out to our area codes, and we have, I think, four area codes out here that we support.
So you guys are on, like, how long are you on?
2-week rotations.
Okay.
And right now our call load is 1 to 2 calls a day, total calls. Despite the huge military presence up here and despite the war, it seems to be kind of an anomaly, but that's about what we've got for call load.
Do you think partly a factor in that is, you know, that you're not as well advertised as you could be?
Perhaps. I don't know. There seems to be quite a few people who are in the military who know when to find us when they need us. It's surprising, and we don't do any advertising, really. It's all word of mouth. So one of the things that turns up often is that people are fooling around the internet and they'll Google draft, and they get Seattle Draft, and sometimes that'll turn them to the thread will go to the GI Rights Hotline.
So give me a sense for the breakdown of your call loads that come in. How many are people that are about to go in versus how many are people that are already in the military?
Yeah, typically, I'd say the majority of the calls are people who have been in the military fairly recently. And a lot of those calls actually come from, or not a lot, but some of the calls, a significant number, come from people who are actually from the parents of listed people. And some of the calls are for conscientious objection claims. But predominantly the calls are from people who have just recently gone into the military and decided that, or found out that they made a mistake, and they'd like some help about that. Unfortunately, once you're in the military, it's a very difficult proposition to get out, particularly these days. If you've just been in the military, it's a little easier than being in there for a year or so, because it's a little easier to get a discharge if you're just recently enlisted. But these days, they're not letting anybody out that they can at all avoid letting out, because they're short of bodies. So the calls are predominantly first-time enlistees and young. People also have problems with we end up being sort of a counseling service, in the sense we just end up listening to a lot of people's problems. There's a lot of problems with money, divorce, abuse, that sort of thing. We hear a lot of that. It's almost like you get problems with suicides and that sort of thing. We hear it all. And again, it's mostly younger first-time enlistees, but also we now get some calls from people who have been out of the military for a number of years and getting called up, and they're in the deep reserves. So, and also people getting called up, we get calls about stop-loss, people who are in the military and are getting extended. So most of the calls are from first-timers, and then We also get calls from the people in the delayed entry program. The delayed entry program is the program by which young people are enlisted in the military. It's through the high schools. Typically, the person signs up for a year and then upon graduation enlists in the military. And the problem with the delayed entry program is the recruiters don't tell these kids that they can actually leave the delayed entry program anytime they want to, and that they're without penalty, and basically for any reason that they choose. And recruiters don't tell the kids this, and then when the kids do decide to get out, the recruiters too often threaten them with military policemen or federal marshals, and tell that their credit will be attacked, their Social Security, all these sort of claims. But in fact, if you're in the delayed entry program, you can leave the delayed entry program anytime you want to. You're not really enlisted until you're enlisted.
Yeah, that's definitely not a fact that gets any coverage in the media, national or local.
Well, it was a problem to the extent that I, with some of the help from the military caseworkers of Senator Murray and also Congressman McDermott, 3 years ago, we got the Seattle School District to issue a memorandum on the delayed entry program, which basically just says states what's the obligations and responsibilities of everybody involved in it, including the recruiters and the students, and they issued an official Seattle School District memorandum of fact, which was issued to all career counselors and staff and everybody else in the district, so that everybody understood what was happening. And the problem was was that the not only the parents and students didn't know about this, but the staff, as in the career counselors, the people who are administrators who are counseling students on career choices, did not know that the delayed entry program allowed people to get out of it anytime they want to. Now they do. In fact, the last couple of school board meetings ago, Holly Ferguson, Seattle General Counsel, mentioned it and reaffirmed their commitment to making this a part of Seattle District public policy.
Do you think that's pretty typical of other school districts as well, that they didn't and or don't know about that?
Oh, the ignorance is pretty widespread. Seattle District is for all of its faults, fairly open and accessible in a lot of respects. No, this is not widely known, and it's a real problem because people end up enlisting, being shoved into the military when they don't really want to be. It's supposed to be a voluntary military, and in a lot of respects, it's not. So one of the most important components of this, of course, is the delayed entry program, by which almost most of the people who are in the military go into the military. And if it's going to be a volunteer military, they have to know their rights and obligations. And currently, people in the Seattle School at least have the opportunity to look at some memorandums of understanding about this, but it's not widely known or broadcast in other school districts, as far as I know.
So talk a bit more about the delayed entry program. What is the trade-off there? What do students get if they sign up early? Do they get, you know, money or college tuition or what?
No, the trade-offs aren't much for somebody who's enlisting in the military through the DEP. You end up going into the military at one higher grade, but that's like instead of going in as a E1 or E2, you go in as an E2 or E3, which is almost negligible money. They do so sort of a little pre-indoctrination, so that when you go into the military, you know a little bit more about the military and that sort of thing. And that you get some points, or if you get other people to join in the military, you get some sort of credits. I'm not exactly sure how that works either, although they say that there's supposed to be some sort of advantage to that. But basically, if you're in the delayed entry program, it's solely for the military's benefit, and as a DEP person, you don't get much out of it except a little pre-indoctrination.
All right, and do you have a sense for how many, percentage-wise, how many people go in via the DEP program and or how many people are recruited directly from the high schools?
Well, that is the one and the same program. All people who go into the DEP are through the high schools, and the large majority, and I don't have those figures with me, but the large majority of people who go into the military, the enlisted ranks, go through the delayed entry program, which is in the high schools. That is the program. Everybody who goes in through the high schools goes through the delayed entry program.
All right. Well, I recently saw your name in the paper, one of the local papers, in relation to what's currently going on at Seattle School District, which is actually being paralleled in other school districts. But it looks like there's a critical date coming up for a concept called opt-out for students. I'm wondering if you can tell us about that and tell us what's been happening here lately.
Well, opt-out is a provision, actually it's a provision of the No Child Left Behind Act. And under that act, the federal government made it a federal law that school districts must hand over to the Department of Defense information about students, and this is personal information, but students and parents have the right to opt themselves out of this process. The kicker, of course, in the No Child Left Behind Act is school districts that don't permit this sort of process to go forward can lose federal funding. So that's the carrot and the stick. The recent sort of things that happened around opt-out was that we just determined that actually students may opt themselves out. And under the No Child Left Behind Act, the language was clear for a lot of people that students could opt themselves out. In fact, it's very, very clear. The language is very express on this point. Nonetheless, a lot of school districts and people were confused because the older regulations under FERPA said that to opt out, you had to have a parent or a student over 18. But we got a recent clarification from the Department of Education, which administers the No Child Left Behind and also FERPA, and they said, yes, students may opt themselves out. That is, language says secondary students, that is a high school student. So any high school student may opt themselves out of contact by military recruiters, and this is a national thing. It's not a local thing. It's a matter of policy by the Department of Education. So it's potentially something very significant because military depends on its back up. Our foreign policy depends on a gun, and the gun is based on having enough bodies to fill the ranks of the soldiery, and a lot of the contact information for recruiters comes through the opt-out. Kids know that they can opt themselves out. That's sort of a cog in the works.
And my understanding is that it's any student can do this. You don't have to be 18. You could be 17.
Right. Any high school student. It says any secondary student. And then that's what the language says, which is high school student. So you do not need to be 18 to opt yourself out. And in the Seattle School District, the deadline for opting out is October 10th. Other school districts around the state and the country are similar. Some actually opt out. They extend that process to as late as April. I know Chicago or New York school districts have that sort of an extension. And actually having that short period, which is really only a month or so for most school districts, is a problem because a lot of parents and students don't know, number one, that they can opt out and, you know, for various reasons don't get their forms in on time. In Seattle school districts, though, that's October 10th. So if you're a Seattle school district student, you can opt yourselves out. Go to the Seattle School District website. They've got an opt-out form there. You can download it, sign it, turn it into the Seattle School District. Seattle School District does not allow you to opt out of other contact information for, like, employers other than the military. Why they make that provision, I'm not quite sure. But anyway, that's their policy right now. But you can specifically opt out of contact by military recruiters if you are under 18 and a student in the Seattle School District.
So in theory, then, sticking with Seattle School District, then after October 10th, then they send this information off to the federal government?
Right. It's by default. That's a cutoff date. So if you haven't turned in your saying, I opt out, your information will be sent to the Department of Defense and turned over to the military recruiters.
And is it your impression that there's still many school districts that don't necessarily know about what the current laws are and with opting out?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of confusion until we got this clarification from the Department of Education. This is only less than 2 weeks old that we actually got the Department of Education to put down, sort of on paper anyway, that students may in fact opt out, clarifying older language and regulations. And this was widely distributed on the internet among circles that I run in anyway, but how well that's been distributed to other school districts remains problematic. Although I have to say that some school districts, including one in Chicago and New York City, which are gigantic public school districts, have for some time anyway allowed their students to opt out, and this was under the language of 9528, which does say clearly that students may opt themselves out. This recent ruling by the Department of Education makes that clear and reinforces that provision. So there shouldn't be any real excuse for school districts to be dragging their feet on this. The language is very clear, and now the memorandum from the Department of Education is very clear. So students who want to opt out can opt out.
But prior to 2 weeks ago, a lot of the school districts weren't real clear on this, and it's my understanding you were actually the guy that went and clarified this, dug it up.
Yeah, I went to the Department of Education website, and under the Ask Us a Question, I asked them a question, and basically my question was, the language under 9528 says that students may clearly opt themselves out, and that our school district legal counsel in this case said no, older FERPA regulations made this that only students who were above 18 or parents could opt themselves out. And I says, what's this contradiction, and what's your opinion of this? And they said, well, yes, in fact, students may opt themselves out. And I just distributed that email response that I got from the Department of Education as widely as I could, and including, of course, the Seattle School District, and our legal counsel, Holly Ferguson, said, that's the law, and we'll comply. And the school district did. She was somewhat confused by the somewhat obtuse regulations herself and welcomed this sort of clarification.
Now, does the GI Rights Hotline or the Seattle Draft and Military Counseling Center that you work with, do they offer this form out to people that might be in a school district that don't necessarily send those out?
Actually, I'm not sure whether we have the current opt-out form available, but you can get a sort of generic opt-out form from WATIR, WATIR, just Google that, and it's a Washington Truth in Recruiting is what the acronym stands for, and there's a generic opt-out form there, which basically says, states the law, quotes the law in total under 9528, and I don't think a school district who got a form like this would reject it, because it's very clear that the language now allows students to opt themselves out.
You were mentioning earlier that things were a lot tougher these days for getting out of the military, and I was wondering if you can tell us, have the laws changed of late, or are they just enforcing the laws more in terms of people being able to get out of the military, in terms of people's rights within the military?
Well, what's happened because of the war, and it's directly because of the war, is that, sort of to back up a little bit, recruiting standards have dropped. You don't have to be a high school graduate to be enlisted in the military. It's not the preferred sort of option anymore. And they're making exceptions for other disabilities or liabilities that they, under a little bit more lush recruiting market, they would have wouldn't have taken these people. So there are a lot more people in the military now who wouldn't have been as before, and things haven't changed. The thing that has changed is, of course, the war, and they don't want to let anybody out because they're shorthanded. So if what would have normally been fairly routine discharges for sort of physical liabilities or even mental liabilities, the disabilities, they're not letting people out, because they all figure that even if you're not going to drive a truck or carry a rifle, you can always punch a computer or something like that. So they're just reluctant, very, very reluctant to. They're missing recruiting goals, so they're shorthanded. We've got the better part of 10 divisions overseas, and we've only got 12 infantry divisions. I think there's 9 or 10 Army and 2 Marine. We've got everything overseas. You know, if it's not in Iraq or Afghanistan, there's some of them still in Germany, some in Korea. So basically, all of our standing infantry divisions are overseas, plus the reserves. So they're shorthanded.
Yeah, I read where they've also notched down the requirements for their officer corps as well.
Well, that figures. Although people who've been in the military Well, I won't say anything about that.
All right. So, talk in terms of rights. You talk about, the parent organization, GI Rights Hotline. I think a lot of people would assume that once you join the military, you have signed away all rights. You pretty much have given away whatever rights you had as a citizen.
Well, that's generally true. I mean, it's a completely different sort of set of rules and ball games, and you don't have the right for public assembly, that sort of thing. You don't have the right to not follow an order, that sort of thing. The Uniform Code of Military Justice is a completely different set of legal framework. If you're in the military, you have to do what you're basically told, and they constantly reinforce that. As soon as you get in the military, you're told to do what you're told to do, and if you don't, you'll end up either ultimately with a bad discharge and or in jail. I mean, that's just the way it is. And it's a shock for a lot of people because they get recruited into thinking that, military is really this place where I can go get some training and education, and three or four years I'll be back on the streets with all this pot of money and all this valuable training. But, you know, military training, that's one of the inducements for enlistment, believe it or not, still, even these days, is that the advantages of military training and being a light weapons specialist, which is an acronym for an infantryman, it's not a marketable job in the civilian world unless you want to work for organized crime. And you don't need to spend 4 years in the military learning how to drive a truck on Highway 9 out of Baghdad. You know, that doesn't require any measurable motor skills. And as far as the educational sort of thing, the military promises to get what they call a GI Bill, the Montgomery GI Bill. You've got to cough up $100 a month for 12 months. And if you fail for some reason to complete your term of enlistment, which about 20 to 25% of the people in the military do, you don't get that money. You don't get the $1,200 initial amount that you actually had deducted from your pay, and you don't get your benefit otherwise, because you have to complete your term of enlistment to get your military educational benefits. So, and then, of course, then being a veteran, I'm a veteran, Vietnam veteran, 40% of the male homeless in this country are veterans. So military is not really a good, for a lot of people, I'd say for most people, not really a particularly good career choice, even on a first-term basis. I know a lot of people probably disagree with this, but particularly being a combat veteran has a lot of liabilities. Not just because you might get injured or killed, but it comes with a lot of baggage, and we're seeing a lot more of that. Incidentally, I mean, the VA here locally, which is one of the best VAs in the country, and the people who work there are very dedicated and competent people, but they're underfunded and short-staffed, and they're doing things here at the local VA, like some of the outpatient counseling for most people in it are Vietnam-era veterans. They're getting their access reduced because of the next generation of veterans coming in. We have to make sort of room for them. So military is, and that's one of the things that we do in the schools, is not just this opt-out thing, is that one of the most important things that this opt-out, walk-out coalition that I belong to and other people, including Veterans for Peace, do in the schools, is try and bring some information to students who may enlist in the military, about what the real options are about military life and recruiters and education, what's available, that sort of thing. And it's our position, and actually I think anybody in education would agree with it, that students have a right to information which they need to make actually a rational sort of choice about joining the so-called volunteer military. You can't make any sort of decisions about anything unless you have good information. Currently, students who do enlist in the military don't have access to any sort of balanced information about the military, military life, and that sort of thing.
Sticking with the opt-out concept, I saw just this week, it was a couple days ago, they had an article in the paper about a family, a woman who was in a taking classes at a community college via her high school, and they were shocked to find, they were Mennonites, and they were shocked to find that she had had her information forwarded on to the federal government because the fact that she had taken these classes at a college was a loophole that the federal government could then get the information again, even though she had they had opted out years back.
Yeah, well, the opt-out thing is specifically for high schools. As I understand it, that's what it's normally applied to. The other problem, I mean, the military has access several ways. For one thing, they're compiling Department of Defense is compiling a federal database now, which they've gotten. They're using sources, getting names from a variety of sources, and there's actually an opt-out to that process, which does not get you off the list, but as they call it, they suppress the information. Exactly what that means, I don't know. And the other way that the military gets its information is through the ASVAB, Armed Services Vocational Battery Test, which are actually administered in a lot of high schools. And it's a test that is given to the schools free and administered by Department of Defense officials. But it is solely for the benefit of the military. It identifies students who might have military aptitudes and is also used as a way to collect, like the opt-out thing is used to collect student personal information, and they use that for contact information. And actually, I'm waiting for a response from the Seattle School District because I do not know how widely the ASVAB test is used in this district, but it is widely used in a lot of other school districts, and it is solely a test for the benefit of the Department of Defense and recruiters to get information on students. And it's widely used, and it is a major problem for those people who are trying to actually encourage students to exercise their privacy rights. So the Department of Defense, the recruiters have a lot of access, and they're well-funded and creative about getting student information. The opt-out is one of the processes, but ASVAB is another, and they've also got this national federal database thing, which is a sort of off the boards and out of anybody's scrutiny. And it's a big problem for people who want to protect their privacy.
Well, unfortunately, we are running short on time. How can people find out more and or contact the Seattle Draft and Military Counseling Center and or the GI Rights Hotline?
Oh, well, you can actually Google either of those, but you can actually, for information on this current opt-out and also walkout campaign, you can contact me, Mike Diedrich, at comcast.net. That's MikeDiedrich at comcast.net. There is a current opt-out walkout campaign going on in the Seattle schools. The walkout is actually a student walkout day for November 2nd, and that's going to be a national walkout day. So, or you can contact, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, WATIR, WATIR, which is Washington Truth and Recruiting, for information about this.
All right. Do you have a phone number for those people that don't have internet access? Phone number for the hotline?
Actually, it'd be more reasonable to give me a call at 328-5477.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
We've just been talking with Mike Diedrich. He is with the Seattle Draft and Military Counseling Center, a member of Veterans for Peace, Chapter 92.